Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal. Weekly, we are brought to you by AllAccessMMA.com. Check out AllAccessMMA.com for our video podcast, MMA news, and MMA stories. This week, we have the pleasure of welcoming back the general manager of 247 Fighting Championship and beer store pimp, Hunter Homestek. What's up, brother?
The most accurate intro I've ever received. That was perfect. Beer store pimp. That's me, baby. Let's go. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me, though, man. It truly is always a pleasure. I know we've been trying to get this going for a while, and I apologize for postponing it, but it always feels good to see you two guys' faces.
Well, you're a busy man. I mean, the title GM doesn't come without it. It's without the weight that it carries. I mean, you've been super busy since we last had you on. 247 seems to have grown from just doing MMA events to doing sub-only grappling. You're doing double headers. You're getting titles made out of like knives or railroad spike knives or whatever it is you have. I mean, new belts with different colors. Like, in such a short amount of time, I can't get over how fast the promotion has grown since you've been on board with them, dude. So what's it been like?
It's been a completely wild ride, and it's funny to hear you run through all of that, because like the railroad spike knife that you're talking about, Dante Leon won that for winning the main event of Sprawl in the Berg 1, our first cage grappling event in July. And that's just for context for people listening, because to me that feels like that happened 3 years ago already. Like that was just in July. But that feels like that was so long ago already, man. The pace that we're moving at over here definitely is crazy. I can legitimately say I've never been a part of a business like this that's this gung-ho on growth and looking towards the future, man. And I mean, I worked for Bleacher Report kind of in their heyday in MMA fighting and flow combat. I've been a part of really, really good teams, but this is so different. And this role as general manager is different because there's so much at stake with a lot of the decisions I'm making and the moves I'm trying to make. So it's definitely crazy for me, man. I've for sure had to learn on the fly, and that's all credit to everybody else involved with 247. The promoter, the owner, Ryan Middleton, is like a business genius. This dude knows he's got his goals. He hits his goals. He has a plan for getting to every single goal. You almost can't fail as long as he's leading the ship. So that's been a huge help for me, man.
You mentioned the Sprawl in the Berg. Last time we had you on, that didn't exist. You know, just a comment from me, you know, the names you've got have been impressive. I got to say, like, I'm not super up on all the grappling guys, but I do, you know, when I see a PJ Barth or a Gray Maynard for that matter, I got to give you credit for pulling that out of your hat so early in the game. But why don't you tell us how that came along, the idea to start doing the submission grappling?
Yeah, for sure, man. So for people watching all over the United States, maybe it's not as evident, but when you're in Pittsburgh and Western PA specifically, like, wrestling is king, dude. Like, there's football and wrestling, and they're kind of hand in hand, but wrestling's even bigger than football here, I think. Like, we literally produce the best wrestlers on earth. Like, you can go collegiate wrestlers, collegiate national champs, a lot of them come from PA. It's widely accepted that, like, if you're a PA state champ in wrestling, you're also in high school, you're also the best in the nation. Like, you would have won in any state if you won in PA. And New Jersey's close for sure. I'm sure Ed's very aware. New Jersey's there. Yeah. Yeah. New Jersey's in the mix. Ohio's in the mix. But definitely this region is like super wrestling heavy, man. So we've always known that a lot of our young debuting amateur MMA fighters are coming from a strict wrestling background. So it's always been very obvious, like, hey, there's potential here. If we ever want to do submission grappling, we're going to get a lot of really stud wrestlers that have audiences, that have already been building their brand, that are kind of recognizable names, even though they're not on that purely jiu-jitsu like a Craig Jones or a Dante Leon circuit. They're going to be names that can sell tickets and generate some attention. So it's always been in the back of our minds, but it took growing the MMA component, which is obviously what we lean the most heavily into. It took growing that to a point where we were ready and in enough of a groove organization-wise, because we're a super small team, man. We have a matchmaker. We have Ryan, who I just mentioned, and me. And then we have some interns, Danny Palm, Dylan Cole. They help us out. But then after that, it's like our friends and family just chipping in where they can. So it was tough enough running one show adding a second show was always going to be very difficult just logistically for us. So until we could really settle in and make sure, like, okay, we're buttoned up enough that I think we could add a second show on Friday and then have MMA on Saturday. And then we went for it in July, man. And we expected it to be good. Not going to lie. Like, we do set our goals really high and we want to do good things. We believe in ourselves, but it was even better than we ever thought it would have been. Dude, like, the turnout was crazy. I think Dante Leon, who is now Flow Grappling, has him ranked number one at 170 in the world. I think he's like literally the number one guy in the world in his weight class. And in his post-fight speech, he said something to the effect of, this is the kind of show I've always wanted to compete in. The fact that it's 3 hours from my home — he lives in Toledo, Ohio — the fact that it's 3 hours from my home is just crazy to me. I cannot believe this exists in Pittsburgh and that I'm like honored to be a part of it. And when he said that, man, it honestly gave me chills, because I was like, we have something here, man. We have some — our very first time out and we're already competing at that level. So it was wild.
Yeah. I remember seeing that clip of him saying that. And that's one of the things that, like I said, man, I think it's just so cool what you guys have been doing that out there. The other thing is, and I mentioned it briefly on last week's podcast, was in such a short amount of time, you're already stepping outside of your comfort zone. Your last show from last weekend, when we were trying to get you on for last Thursday, it was because you were busy setting up for last weekend's show, which was not in the Berg. It was outside of — where was it? It was in Cincy, right?
It was like 15 minutes from downtown Cincinnati. So, yes, yeah. It was technically Sharonville, Ohio, but we called it 513 Fight Night, which is 513 is Cincinnati's area code. Mm. I have a friend who lives in Cincinnati and grew up in Cincinnati, bleeds Cincinnati. So I was working with him like, hey, if we call it this, are people going to think that's cheesy because it's like Sharonville, not really Cincinnati? He's like, no, dude, that's 100% Cincinnati. So it's just a small suburb of Cincinnati.
But
it's exactly what BKFC does. So, for example, yeah, like Denver. It's not in Denver. It's in Bloomfield. You know, same thing.
Right.
But what was your stress level like? Because I mean, from knowing you, like you're such a positive, like even keel dude. Like, I've never seen you — you know, you've never — one of the coolest thing when we first met, we just talked about trying to be positive around people and helping other people out, which that you've been like that with me through and through. So, like, how do you handle it had to be stressful going outside of what you're used to dealing with. I mean, just like, and then looking at it's funny to see you standing in the middle of the face off when the fighters are, because you're there trying to look your best, like to see if you're ready for something jumps off. I think it helps that you're as tall as you are, but how do you handle just all the stress of something? I mean, it's because it's regulated violence. So how do you handle all the stress that comes with the business side and the potential tempers that might flare?
Dude, it's tough, brother. I'll be honest. Like you said, I am Mr. Positivity. And I say this to Ryan and Jim, our matchmaker, all the time, is like, I always want to be the most positive guy in the room. And it's not even an intentional decision on my part. That's just the kind of energy that I want to bring and that I think I naturally kind of give to people. And it helps diffuse situations. So in that realm, we've had some stuff minorly pop up. We haven't had a big, you know, Mayhem Miller and Diaz brothers brawl or anything like that, but we've had some things pop off, and that is kind of my gift, is being able to talk people down and just calm. Like, we're calm and collected here, so thankfully I have that just kind of naturally. But on the stress side, and with Cincinnati specifically, dude, it was by far — and we're talking, I don't even know what second place would be, because this is so outlandishly first place — the most stressful time of my life that week. Oh my God, man. Because when I came to 247, Ryan was still kind of doing everything and showing me. It was like he's taking me under his wing and like helping me get up to speed. So we had, you know, Bippy, not Braunberg 9, October 2021, I want to say, was like my first show as GM. And I did very little for that one. It was mostly like Ryan telling me to do things, and then I go do them, kind of learn the process. Bippy 10, right? I'm doing a little more. Bippy 11, doing a little more. 12, a little more. Bippy 17 was the one before Cincinnati, just to give you a timeline to see how long it stretched on, like 2 years worth of shows. And finally, for Cincinnati, it was basically just me. Like, he took the training wheels off fully by that point, and it was me in a new market, in charge of everything with our matchmaker, Jim. And of course, Ryan was still kind of checking in where he could. But for the most part, man, like, better have that hotel booked, better have the venue set, sound guy, lighting guy, live stream, all these little things that people do not necessarily think of when they watch a show. Like, I had to coordinate all that.
Oh, wow.
In a new market, like, didn't have our usual backing of sponsors in that market and just the fights, the gyms, the coaches that we know and have a really good rapport with in Pittsburgh. They're not there anymore. It was like ripping off the Band-Aid, man, and throwing me in the deep end. Like, let's see if you can swim now, dude. So we did. I mean, we had an excellent show, and there were, you know, zero major issues logistically and things like that. So on that level, it was very much all worth it. But I felt those growing pains for sure. And Ryan did admit after the fact, he was like, that was kind of funny, like watching you deal with all the things that I had to deal with when I launched this company and had our first show. Like, I remember what that felt like. And he's like, it was kind of fun to watch you try to navigate that.
Well, you're not slowing down though, huh? You got two events coming up in about a month and then a December event already scheduled. Schedule's full. What's the plan? Are you guys looking to try to eventually get to like one or, you know, a grappling and a submission event every month, or I'm sorry, a combat and then a submission event every month, or what's the plan, or what's the outlook for like 2024 in your mind?
Yeah, man. So you mentioned October. We do have another doubleheader with Sprawl in the Bird 2, October 20th, and then Brawl in the Bird 18 MMA the next day, October 21st, at the Hollywood Casino at the Meadows, which we've had three or four shows there already. And the casino is, it's kind of become our kind of all-star venue, I would call it. It's smaller. It only holds like 1,300 people at the absolute max. So it's a place we can legitimately sell out. Like, the last show, we had a lot of people that we had to tell, like, I'm sorry, dude, you're going to have to watch the live stream. Like, we literally can't. We don't have tickets for you. This thing is actually sold out. People always think that's like a promoter's promotional speak, like, oh, we're almost sold out. But when we say it, we actually are. like we're not trying to fool you. We want you to come to our show. Believe me, we want you to be there. That's why we're trying to warn you of that. But we have that coming up in October, and then December, another doubleheader. I mean, kind of touched on it earlier, but the first Sprawl in the Berg was just such a big success that we're kind of just adding that to our regular rotation because, again, logistically, the things people don't think of, we're having an MMA show on Saturday, but the cage and the chairs, the tables and everything are already set up on Friday with most venue agreements. Like, we get in there either Thursday or Friday and we're fully set up by Friday night. So essentially, we can have the grappling show in the cage with zero extra work for Saturday. It's just a wasted day if we don't do it. So that's kind of how that also came to be, where we were like, we're already setting up Friday anyway. Why don't we just also have another show? So that, yeah, it all worked together like that. So that clears out 2023. And then for 2024, my dudes, is when things get really, really exciting. And we just announced, if you guys are listening to this right now, we literally just announced at 247 Fighting Championships, our biggest, we build it on the podcast as our biggest announcement to date. And it truly, truly is something that's game changing, that's never been done in Pittsburgh MMA. And we're closing on getting our own venue. It's going to be Pittsburgh's Apex Center, man. Like, that's the best way I can put it for hardcore MMA fans. It's going to be a place where we can have the cage set up, ready to roll at all times. The cage is always set up. It's going to be a venue, you know, the full sound, lighting, walkouts, everything that you've come to expect from 247. If you followed us, is just getting ramped up. We're turning it to 11 for a Spinal Tap reference for you guys. And we're also going to have food and alcohol component there. So it's going to be an all-inclusive combat sports party zone, but also it's going to be our home base. It's going to allow, like you were saying, Matt, it's going to allow us to switch to kind of a show every month, whereas now it's a show every 3 months or so, something like that. We're now have the ability, because we're not paying venue fees, we're not having to set, I mean, obviously, you know, we're paying for the venue, but we're not paying additional venue fees. We are getting a cut of food and alcohol, which we currently don't with our deals. All these little things are going to be taken care of to where, like I was saying about the Friday show, well, it's already set up. You might as well have a show. It's going to be permanently set up here, so we could just have shows whenever. And what's really exciting for me, man, I know you guys are into other things in MMA too, is that we're looking to turn it into just a general event venue also. Like, there's nothing stopping us from getting comedians and musicians in there and having other types of shows than just combat sports. So we've been around long enough that we've got a feel for the venues that are currently available in Pittsburgh. We know what kind of deals they offer you. We know what they charge for. We know how they charge. And we've seen a lot of places where we could improve. You know, it's a constant struggle for promoters to find a good venue. So since we've been on that side of things, we felt promoters' pain on that side of things. We want this venue to be the most attractive. So we want to actually get in outside boxing promoters and combat sports promoters. We want, obviously, 247 shows there. But we're really looking forward to having other outside promoters come in and bring your show. Like, let's do it here. Let's, a lot of the things that annoy you about these other places, we're not going to do that to you, and we'll help you guys promote it. So it's exciting, man. It really is our little apex center, and it's a really, really big deal for us, man. This is going to be the huge focus in 2024.
That's really cool, man. I think that, again, with the short time you guys have been around, that's a really big move. So one of the reasons, like, people don't, you compared it to the Apex, and Matt and I just talked about, like one of the reasons the UFC has so many events in the Apex, even though COVID's not as concerning as it used to be, you know, folks are still wondering, well, why don't they leave the Apex? Well, you just said all the reasons why a promoter wouldn't want to leave a home base location that they could hold events and still get people to tune in at the level that they do. So, it makes me the same question I have to ask you, though, because you just went to Ohio, you build this place in Pittsburgh. So is that going to make you, obviously cost wise with the money you make having a home base and holding events there, is it going to make you like go to further locations when you do decide to step outside of the burg
Yeah, I think so. It's a fun little kind of behind the scenes nugget on us that I don't know that I've ever talked about on a podcast or publicly, but I'll tell you guys because I love you. But we were actually looking at Richmond, Virginia before Cincinnati. We went to Richmond. We scouted several venues there, and like we thought Richmond was going to be the next place after Pittsburgh. But the deeper we got into it, we found out about a lot of fees that their state commission charges. The state of Virginia in general makes it a lot harder to have events. There were a lot of hurdles where basically right off the top of every show, you're down 15% of whatever you made if you're having a show in Virginia. So it was like, just to break even for our first one, we would have had to basically sell out the place that we were really looking at, which I do think the scene, like if you look at Richmond's gyms, there are some really good gyms, some really good fighters there. I do think the scene in general could sustain it, but it was just so risky for, like, you have to do your absolute best just to break even. It's not a very good business move. So we started looking elsewhere and then found Cincinnati. And obviously, you know, we think we found something there as well. So that'll be the move for now. Pittsburgh, you know, we had 20 shows before we looked at another location. Mm-hmm. It took 20 shows to get to Cincinnati. So I would imagine that we're going to continue to build Cincinnati first before looking at Richmond or wherever the third place may be. We're not going to just start branching out for no reason. We really want to have a strong foothold and a strong foundation wherever we are, because we see it in Pittsburgh. You know, we see exactly how it works in Pittsburgh and why it's so appealing to people in Pittsburgh. And I truly feel strongly that that's how it has to be anywhere you do it. If you just start going off willy-nilly, and we've seen other regional promotions do this where they're in Tennessee one week, they're in Indiana the next week, they're in New York the next week after that, and they just spread themselves thin, man. And by the time you realize that you're losing too much money, it's too late. So that's not what we want to do. We don't want to repeat those mistakes.
No, I mean, that's it's got to help with the stress level too, knowing that everything's going to be set up, you know, you got that much. And then my mind soars with just the idea of what you could do with your own venue and the possibilities of special fight nights, of Halloween events, of, I mean, it blows my mind. The fun of that, you know, going back, you're doing it legally. You said it's obviously new to Pittsburgh. That's pretty much new to everywhere. No smaller regional organization is really kind of doing that thing. You know, usually it's, he mentions the Apex. In the late 90s, my instructor, Mark Hall, tried to do it. Unfortunately, he tried to do it in California when MMA wasn't illegal, but it was the most bitching place I'd ever worked. I helped him put on a couple events, and it was so awesome. It was designed like you know, you just picture stuff like in your mind what you could do. And back then it was all UFC, so there was octagon pictures of Severn and Fry and his own camera set up, and you know, it had his own sound systems, and just having that in-house was something that I looked at. And it was a small, I mean, we're talking crowds of like 50 people. It was private parties and stuff.
Oh, wow.
But it was, you know, the mayor would show up and have a private party and then call the cops a couple weeks later to have everybody arrested. That was the Wild West back then.
That's honestly one of the sickest things I've ever heard. Like the environment there had to be just absolutely unreal on fight night. I mean, that's that small of a crowd in a venue that's just tailor made for violence. That sounds incredible, man. That's pretty special. But yeah, for comparison, our venue is going to hold around 800 to 1,000 people on fight night. I know we can get 1,000. That's really cramming it in. That's going to be like a lot of general admission standing room to hit that number, 800 comfortably. But it's a really cool venue, man. It's an old movie theater, actually. So it's a movie it's a movie theater that shut down during COVID. So kind of the main lobby, where like you can picture any movie theater, I'm sure they're all roughly the same. The main lobby is like where the cage will actually be and the majority of the seating will be. But it's two stories because there used to be a sports bar upstairs as well. So there's this whole balcony section that we're going to turn into like the food and beverage component of things, but also some exclusive kind of VIP seating along the rails where they can look right down into the cage. I mean, you guys have seen it. You guys have seen enough shows live to know that that's really the ideal view. Mm-hmm. Like being above, everybody wants that cage side seat. Like, everybody wants that cage side, media row, whatever seat. Mm-hmm. But really, that's not as good as being up a little bit and to the side where you can truly see everything develop. So we've kind of identified where we're going to put our sponsors and some VIP people, stuff like that. It's going to be a really, really cool venue, man. And yeah, being in the movie theater, it's a really cool vibe in general. You can kind of tell the remnants, like it's very much movie theater carpet, which I was – it, like everybody I feel like knows what that carpet looks like kind of neon and just abstract symbols and stuff. Like I was like, let's keep that, please. Like that's a fun like let's clean it. Maybe clean it first.
I was just gonna say that. But make sure you clean it first.
For sure. Yeah. Clean it, but it looks cool. Like that's a fun little homage to what this place used to be.
So the other thing, I mean, I have to ask because you mentioned it. I mean, it's a home base venue and all the cool stuff with the seating and the VIP. But you mentioned alcohol and food, and if anybody that is not following you already on all your socials doesn't know that you are a foodie person. You're a foodie, however you want to describe it. Even though I don't agree with a lot of the things you like, but I believe you're a proponent of pineapple on pizza, which.
Ooh, I totally am. But I thought for sure you were going to go with like sour cream and cheese on tacos, which I also really like.
All day.
That's American tacos, I think, are incredible. I'm sorry.
So my question is, who's going to make the decision on are you going to have people bid for like who sells the food, or are you going to be like, no, my dude that hooks up the slam and cheese steaks gets a spot upstairs?
That's a super interesting question, man. And that's definitely one thing that we're going to fall headfirst into. So we have had preliminary talks with guys that we know have some level of interest. I have my dream pick, and this guy is very interested. I honestly, like we said, I'm very positive, very optimistic, but I do genuinely think we can work something out with this guy. So I can't unfortunately say
him
right now. Gordon Ramsay.
No, it's not. It's actually Guy Fieri.
There you go. Flavor Town and Combat Town, right?
So a little bit. Sir. I mean, I know we're going off a little bit on the tangent with this, but I just had Matt. I went to the place that used to be the Michael Landon place that I took you to in Brooklyn with the Michael Landon head. So it's a new place that the name of it. It's called something else, and you know, me and Jeff call every place we drink, we give it another name. But in the basement of that place where you and I hung out, now they have like an underground restaurant inside this bar called Ramirez Burger. And you guys know what birria tacos are, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So imagine that as a double cheeseburger. It's like a...
Oh, my God.
It's a birria burger.
That sounds so good, dude.
Like a birria torta, then.
Yeah. So it's like the a pork and beef patty with a chorizo patty and the cheese melted and the birria sauce all, obviously all little, soaked into it. Yeah,
little consomme to dip it in. Let's go, dude.
I had that for the first time a couple of weeks ago. And so the whole reason I'm bringing that up is because, like you said, you have your, you know, you have things that are your favorites, but then you go out and try food and you find new favorites. Like some guy like that just started and he's just in the basement of some bar. Like you throw somebody like that in a venue like what you have, and they literally could be the next Bauhaus. You know what I mean?
Dude, you're dead on. And I don't know, you got a knack for this thing, man. Because the guy that we're talking to that I really want in there, the idea would be, so he has a restaurant in Pittsburgh already that's very successful, very well known. And my idea for him is to do that, but kind of like you just said, with a little bit of a twist. Like, I don't want the same menu you serve there. I want you to make it like fight night, more digestible, obviously, kind of quick bitey type stuff. But he has a very trained, he went to culinary school, that kind of, he's a legit trained chef. Like, he can totally do this and have a lot of fun with it. And it's a style of food that lends itself to just anything. Like, you really can't go wrong within this style. So I think he would have a lot of fun with it, man. And we could really do some really special stuff. So that component of things, as well as like, there's a local distillery that we've been talking to as well to kind of become the official beverage of the 247 event center. So there's a lot of avenues within that realm. It's like a business within a business at that point. You know, we're having events, but the food and beverage restaurant business is going to be an equally big part of our lives here very soon. So that, yeah, dude, we're going to be hitting the ground running. I'm going to have to learn to walk all over again.
That's going to be a fun journey though.
So
you're kind of locking down the Pittsburgh area. How have the fighters that you've had on, I know you've had Kama Worthy fight for you. One of the things that I always loved about regional shows is that I could usually go to a regional show and one of the local fighters, you know, for me, I was lucky as hell. It was Dan Henderson, or it was Chuck Liddell, or it was Tito Ortiz, or it was Marco Huas. I mean, Peter Arts, I sat by the guys at
events. Who are these guys?
But that was it was easy for me to get friends to go to events because it was like, dude, Dan Henderson, I guarantee Boss Rutten's going to be there. You're a favor. Yeah. You know, like, obviously those names are, you know, think of the past, and you've got a new generation of guys are, you know, I'm assuming you're trying to do it as a promoter, or as a recommendation, I would say the best thing you could do to keep people around is get them involved with those guys. Keep those guys, if you can do fan meet and greets, if you can do little autograph sessions, even with your undercard guys, have them meet people at the door, shake hands on the way in the door. I tried to get it to Bellator to do that. They'd have local guys on the undercard. I said, put them at the weigh-ins, shaking hands at the people coming in the door. Let them introduce themselves. Give a guy on the prelims an 8x10 photo to autograph 30 autographs for the night. It'll create stars and it'll get a connection with your local fans that will make them want to be at every show those guys fight at.
Dude, you guys, first off, Ed with the food and beer and you with the promotional side of things, you guys are super on point tonight. So one thing that's definitely, man, those are all excellent points and I couldn't agree more with everything you said. So one thing we do at every show is we have whenever the card's finalized, which is usually like the Monday of fight week, weigh-ins are on Friday, around Monday, the card's set in stone, and we'll have a bunch of posters printed with every matchup on it. So it's like a little matchup card. You got like when people do their UFC picks and it's that full card with everybody's face on it. It's like that. And then we print out a bunch of those physically and we have all the fighters sign them on the card, and all the fighters get to keep one. First of all, after their fight, they get one just as a keepsake. But then the rest of them, we go out and give them just to fans in the audience. Like, here's something to remember us by. And a lot of times it is the fighters kind of handing them out or our team handing them out, so they remember us. That's funny, man, that you said that, because little stuff, people overlook that or don't think that matters, but that really matters. And especially for these guys coming up, I do think that, like, the world, the dynamic has changed a lot because these amateur fighters even can reach so many people on social media that by the time they actually see them fight, there a lot of fans feel like they already know them, which is a really interesting thing that didn't exist whenever MMA was just kind of starting up and gaining traction everywhere. So there are guys locally who you can tell have stronger social media presences, and then that translates to more ticket sales, which translates to more fans blatantly cheering for you in the venue. It's something super interesting with regional MMA, but you can always tell the guys who sold a lot of tickets versus the guys who did not sell a lot of tickets, because the fans there, it's not like, it's not just like me or you, like I'm a fan of whoever, say whoever in the UFC, John Jones. I'm a John Jones fan. It's like John Jones's mom, dad, cousin, uncle, aunt. It's like the most intense cheering section you could ever imagine for these guys. So it's a really cool dynamic, man. But to your point, Matt, that's all that little stuff super matters. And the guys who get it locally are for sure, like Kamal Worthy, you mentioned, he got it and he went to the next level. There was a guy we had, Mark Cherico. He totally got it. He was on Contender Series as well. Adam Milstead. He got it, and he went to the UFC. It's no coincidence that the UFC wants these guys who also know how to promote themselves. And we just had we were out in Ohio, like we said, which was a totally new market for us. And there was a kid, Dylan Budka, in that realm that we had known in that Ohio region for a long time. And he was just on Contender Series the week of our show and made it to the UFC, got signed after his fight. And if you watch him, and I said this on a different podcast, but like watch what he did with his regional career, and any regional fighter should try to follow that template, man. He was super active. First of all, he was taking fights against anybody, middleweight, light heavyweight, heavyweight. He did not care. He was fighting anybody, anytime, and he was winning the vast majority of them. Obviously, that does matter still, but he was constantly on social media and constantly promoting his fight. I'm in Pittsburgh. He's not fighting for us, and he's fighting for regional promotions. But I knew every time that dude had a fight, 100%. I knew when Dylan Budka was fighting, and that was because he was doing such a good job of getting that in front of people. And I was like, dude, this guy's going to make it. And sure enough, he did. And I think he actually had a really – I didn't see it, but I heard he had a really lackluster fight on Contender Series but still got signed to the UFC. And to me, I know a lot of people are like, how did that guy get signed? But to me, I was like, UFC sees exactly what we just saw at 247. This kid will market the crap out of himself. He knows what he's doing. They know that they got something to work with him. So that stuff matters, man. Like, ultimately, yes, you got to win fights. You got to have a good record. You got to have a good style. But promoters care, dude. Even all the way up to the UFC, they care if you put yourself out there and are marketable and give them something to sell.
Who, just talking about guys like the guys you just mentioned, you know, with all the events you've held, who's the guy that, you know, who, like, our boy Nolan King, likes to write the On the Doorstep articles.
Yeah.
For the guys that fight at 247, for you anyway, in your opinion, I mean, who are the guys that are the ones that you can see being on the next On the Doorstep article like that?
Nice, dude. I love this question because I love giving these guys shine. So I'm going to give you three guys at three very different levels. Ethan Goss is our pro heavyweight champ. He's 10-6 right now, but he's on a 5-fight winning streak. He has a title fight coming up for us that we literally just announced Thursday, coming up in October, October 21st. So if he wins that 6 straight, this is a guy who I understand 11-6 is not the sexiest record, but if you really dig into his amateur and early pro career, he was taking fights he never should have took. He was taking fights that were super hard for that stage in his career. And dude, these last 5, and maybe again, if he wins this one, 6 fights in a row, he just keeps looking better and better and better and better. He's a guy, he's our pro champ, pro featherweight champ, defended the belt twice. This will be his 3rd title defense. He's a guy that, like, we love him. Ethan's awesome. Mm-hmm. He's got a really tough fight in October, but we want him to get away. Like, go to the UFC, dude. Like, we want you in the UFC. Like, that would be so cool because we've only ever had 3 pro champs. Kamal Worthy, who did go to the UFC from us. Like, he was our champ and then got called up to the UFC. John DeJesus, who was our champ and then got called up to Bellator. And then Ethan, who is still with us. And it's like, you gotta, like, one more win, there's nothing else we can do for you, bro. You have to go to the UFC. So he's the guy that is most immediately on the doorstep. Another guy I would throw into the conversation, and this is coming straight off of Cincinnati. So again, a guy we don't have as much history with, but Immortal Martial Arts, Matt Brown's gym, has a pro heavyweight named Cameron Kinzig. Dude, this guy's 6'7". He played football at Ohio State. He's 4-0 now as a pro, and he got the best finish of the night, probably going to be our knockout of the year for 247 with a lead front kick, lead teep to the face, Anderson Silva style. Like, it was just disgusting, and he's just demolishing everybody. And at heavyweight, it's a much thinner weight class overall. There's not as many prospects at heavyweight. This guy has literally everything that you would want. If he's not on the contender series like very soon, I would imagine one more win, and he definitely will be. Like, that guy's definitely knocking on the doorstep of bigger, better things. So Cameron Kinzig's number two. And then here's my wild card pick. We have our amateur featherweight champ. His name's Lucas Siebert. He is now 5-0. He wrestled collegiately at West Virginia University. He started his career with us and has had 3 out of his 5 amateur fights with us. His progression has been really, really incredible to watch. Like, his last fight, the title fight for us, he fought our previous champion, Cam Allgaier, who was 6-1 at the time, and he was ranked number one on Tapology in the region and all that good stuff. He's an absolute savage. This kid's so good. And everybody thought going into that fight, like, this is too much too soon for Lucas Siebert. This is going to be where he finds out. Like, there's levels to this. But the exact opposite happened. Lucas rose to the occasion, man. He put on the best version of himself that anybody's seen, even myself included. I was like, and I thought highly of Lucas already, but to me, that fight was like 50-50. Lucas came out and was just like, I have another gear, guys. Like, you needed the right opponent to bring it out of me. And it did, man. And he just completely dominated the fight, which surprised literally everybody. So now I'm thinking, like, how good is this guy? Like, how much better is he gonna be with time? Because he's still 23 years old, I think. Super young, still super young to MMA, but all the raw talent, the bravado. He talks a lot in the cage, man. His style's awesome. After all of his fights, we hear guys all the time, that Lucas Siebert kid, like, I'm gonna watch his next fight. We hear that all the time from fans and just general spectators. So he's got kind of that it factor where if he stays the course, he could be something really special, I think. And he's grappling a guy at Sprawlenburg too, actually, October 20th. His name's Gavin Teasdale, who was a 4-time state champ wrestler in Pennsylvania. And earlier I said, you know, if you win states once, that means you're the best guy in the nation. Gavin literally won states as a freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior. Like, he's one of the best. 13 guys have done that in Pennsylvania state history. Gavin's one of 13 people that have ever done that. So he's like the elite of elite of elite grapplers. So if Lucas beats Gavin Teasdale grappling, like, the hype train is going off the rails, dude, with that kid. Like, he's definitely an underdog in that. Gavin is an absolute savage, especially in grappling. He's a good MMA fighter as well, very good pro flyweight. But if Lucas can beat him at pure grappling, that's going to be like, okay, how good is this kid? And then he's that next level, yeah.
Yeah. So when you got a kid like that, and I'm not asking the inner workings of how you deal with contracts and stuff more than what you want to ever talk about, but like, historically, you've only heard of a few situations where smaller promotions have had guys under contract and the UFC's wanted them and they've kind of withheld it, or, you know, kind of it's 1 out of 100 throughout the history. It's probably less than, more than that. It's 1 out of 1,000 of the times you've heard it. When you talk about guys going to the contender series, are any of these guys under contract? And if they are, does the UFC reach out to you to basically ask permission, or are the guys kind of free if they hear something through their managers, or to basically tell you, hey, UFC called last night and I know I'm supposed to fight in a month, but you know how this goes. So yeah, how does that work?
Super awesome question. And this is the kind of stuff that for me has been really interesting to learn. So none of our guys are currently on multi-fight deals. So this is something that we've discussed, though, and we've approached, and we do have a fighter right now locally that we're currently discussing a multi-fight deal with that I think we're going to get done. But even within that multi-fight deal, there is an opt-out clause for them where if the UFC or Bellator PFL is also in there, but that's it, UFC, Bellator, PFL, which includes Contender Series, if they come calling, you get an instant out from this fight. You're good. Take it. Mm-hmm. So that's literally just baked into their contracts to where they are allowed to do that with us. Now, I cannot speak to, you know, CFFC or LFA or these other, you know, bigger regional promotions who send people. I don't know for them. I'm not sure how it works. I just know for ours, we do recognize, like, there's a chance that that next level will come calling. And if they do, we want you to be able to take that, you know?
Yeah.
We genuinely want that for you. And let's be honest, it looks good for us too, right? Like if we're sending guys to the UFC, that makes us very attractive to amateur fighters or young beginning out pros moving forward. And that's definitely what we want to become and what we think we can get to.
For sure. For sure. I mean, that's, and just knowing you, like, I know you're not the type of guy like you know, the whole point is to help these guys chase what they're chasing. So, like, I would imagine I kind of knew your answer before you said it. We only got about 10 minutes left on the podcast, or 10, 15 minutes left on the podcast. We do have to talk about the other event that happened, some smaller event happened. The UFC 290 on the other side of the world. So we weren't really that far. But UFC 293, title change hand there. I know you said you had gotten a chance to see it after you watched what was going on in your neck of the woods. What's your take on the title changing hands, the fight, how it went? What was your reaction to that?
I was just wondering if 293, was that the zip code of Australia that they were in? Was that, wasn't sure why they called it that, but no, dude, that I did. So our event was over around 10 p.m. Eastern time. By the time I got, like, packed up, everything torn down that needed set up, I did get back to the hotel in time actually to watch the main event. Literally, the main event was just starting when I got there. So I got to see every second of that. And dude, I mean, I said it to everybody in the room and everything, but I said before the fight, like, I'm not unique in this regard. I was like, if Sean Strickland pulls this off, this is like Holly Holm beating Ronda Rousey. Like, this, that level of upset for me. I just could not envision any way that he gets it done. Even in the most volatile sport ever, where one punch can change everything, I did not see a way that Sean Strickland was going to possibly win that fight, let alone dominate the fight for 25 minutes. Like, that was the single most unlikely outcome, and it happened. I mean, what can you even say about MMA, dude? It's the best sport ever for that.
Yeah. I mean,
293 is the amount of money you walk away with after fighting in Australia, apparently.
$293. Oh my god, they just take 50% right off the top. I saw that. Wow. Man, poor Mac Desi. I felt bad for him when I saw that.
Yeah, no, I mean, now people are feeling bad for a lot of the fighters now after seeing that. I have to come clean too, because the guys I train with at my gym are calling me out that, and they listen to this podcast too. So I have to come clean that, because I was pretty adamant about my pick Adesanya. And then last minute, shout out to Brian Cruz, who was the one that said it. He was like, hey, I don't care if Adesanya's going to win. Strickland's plus 440. I'm going to put money on him just because. And that stuck in my head the whole day. So that afternoon, I was like, you know what? Let me put $5 on. And I look, he jumped up to plus 490. So I wound up like changing my pick last minute too, and coming out pretty happy that night with my Sean Strickland pick.
That's hilarious, dude. That's a great lesson. And speaking of Holm Rousey, when that fight was going down, my one buddy's name's Dan Sweeney. He actually does some camera work for us now, 247. We went to college together too, so it's a funny kind of like full circle moment for us. But he's always been like more interested than average in MMA, but certainly not what you would consider a hardcore fan. Doesn't watch every event or anything like that. We were watching the Holm Rousey event, which, I don't know, was it 193? I don't remember the number of that pay-per-view, but yeah. Oh, sweet. So 193, and he told me before we watched, he's like, bro, I'm going to throw down $50 on Holly Holm right now. Like, these odds are just ridiculous. Yeah. And I literally told him, I'm like, Parm. All right, we call him Parm. Sorry, that's his nickname. It's like, Parm, you might as well take $50 and go throw it in my toilet and flush it, because you have zero chance. Like, dude, seriously, we're you know, like, broke college kids at the time. I'm like, dude, do not waste $50 on this bet. And he didn't. He didn't make the bet. And immediately after it happened, I was like, I'm so sorry, dude.
I was like,
it wasn't even close. It wasn't even close. It was a boat race from the start.
Yeah, it was the
You better give him a job. You may cost him. Yeah. You better give him a job as your cameraman. I mean,
that's it. Yeah,
That's probably how he walked in for the when you put the post. We need a cameraman. He probably just walked in with his hands on his hips. Oh yeah.
Interesting.
You got the job.
Actually, whatever you were gonna pay me $50 more than that. Yeah, dude. But Matt, you're dead on because that fight was the same way, in that it wasn't just like the flash knockout, crazy punch, Matt Serra, GSP. It wasn't that. It was where one person was actually better over the course of an entire fight in every way. So that's what was crazy to see to me with that Strickland fight. Like, maybe some part of me could convince myself, like, all right, he gets the fight to the ground, gets his back, and chokes him out. Like, maybe that could happen. In no world does Sean Strickland outstrike Israel Adesanya for 25 minutes. I still can't believe that happened.
No, that's where you would think someone would blow a knee out, or someone would get cut, or you'd see a terrible judge's decision, or, you know, but we talked about it, and I don't think, in my mind, it's not the hugest upset ever. It's just, it's shocking how it went down. Because, you know, it's 1-5. Strickland has some good wins. You know, it's not like it's just, it's not totally out of the realm of anything. And the only thing we talked about is we've interviewed some of the younger amateur fighters that train with Sean Strickland. And out here at Team Quest when he was out here with Dan Henderson and stuff. And they both, without any kind of lead-in, mentioned Sean Strickland as somebody that was, like, on a next level. That even though they're training there, there was something different about Sean Strickland. And obviously there's something different about Sean Strickland. But as an MMA fighter, there was just something that was like the fact that both of them brought him up. Just it was one of those things where it was kind of eye opening. We talked about it last week in our picks, and I mentioned, well, there might be something there. You know, there might be, you know, the facade of the act, or whether it's an act or whether it's everything's real. That's we can talk for that for hours. But just his focus on MMA and his physical ability, and knowing that if he's training at Team Quest with Dan Henderson and Joe Stevenson and all the guys they have there, it's crazy what goes on at that gym still to this day. If he's training with them and he's getting game plan from coaches, even if he's not training there, if he's training with gyms similar to that, and he's got his coaches coming up with a game plan, it's overall not that shocking when I had heard his talent, but to see him go in there and just put on it was the probably the closest we've ever seen to almost like a Mayweather performance in MMA, in that he won the fight with defense. I know he landed that big punch early, but that was always what made Mayweather, in a sense, boring but fascinating at the same time, is that he didn't get hit. If you told me Strickland was going to go 5 rounds with Adesanya and afterwards could go to a restaurant and probably not even be recognized as a fighter or be asked why he has a black eye, is just incredible.
Yeah. You know what's crazy though, one of the best breakdowns of it that I heard was from Mighty Mouse when he talked about how the fact that he was doing pressure kind of like Kelvin Gastelum almost got a good piece of Adesanya when they fought. But it was almost like a slower version of that. And Mighty Mouse, he said something along the line, and I don't remember word for word, but he said something along the lines of, it's that slow pressure that makes a counter puncher like Izzy get thrown off his game, because he wants you to come at him crazy so he can come back with the same. And it just seemed like that, we, you know, because he literally just kind of walked at him with his hands up and checked some kicks and threw very basic punches at him. But he did that a lot, and the fact that he did it not so fast seemed to throw Adesanya off, and that's kind of what Mighty Mouse said. And then when I rewatched all the highlights again, I was just like, man, he's right. Like that guy literally did. He got through the shield by not coming at it hard and fast, just pushing against it very, very, very slow.
Super interesting, man. I know I've referenced this story a lot because it stuck out to me when he said it. I was talking to Cody Garbrandt like very early in his pro career, and he's a guy who trained at a very high level boxing pretty much his entire life. He's pretty much known how to box his entire adult life at a very high level. And he would always say that like the guys who are wild and unorthodox and not doing things by the book were always the guys who could get him. Like, if you give me a guy who does what I'm expecting, so, like, for Izzy's case, it's another, you know, pro kickboxer, like Pereira. Like, I understand what you're doing. I get this. Like, this is the game that I play. This is the dance that I dance. When you get a guy who's doing something very unorthodox, which Strickland has a very unorthodox striking style for modern MMA, those are the guys who are like, what are you doing, bro? Like, none of this is what you should be doing. And I don't even know what to do with this. Mm-hmm. So I always remember Cody Garbrandt telling me that, and it holds up throughout time, man. Like, it's very true where that just, maybe it's not, you know, the best overall tactic for modern MMA striking, but it certainly worked against the guy who many felt was the best striker. And that's all mm-hmm. that mattered on that night, which is amazing. And also another fun thing of Strickland's career that I love is that people, I don't know, maybe they have talked about it. I'm not quite as tuned into the media, but another case of a guy moving up in weight class and having way more success. Whereas the old school approach was, you know, fight as low as you can, be as heavy as you can, and as big as you can. He's a guy who was good at 170 and certainly had success at 170, but now has found his best self at 185. So I like guys like Robert Whittaker as well. I like when guys can go up and kind of find more success because, I don't know, maybe it's the promoter in me now being at weigh-ins all the time. I hate seeing dudes literally killing themselves to make weight and just knowing how that has to be affecting their performance. Like, I just strongly feel that that's not the best way to do it. So it's cool when a guy goes the opposite way and has a lot of success.
No, speaking speaking of the weigh-ins and stuff at 247, what's the deal with you dressing like the guy from Jeepers Creeper at the weigh-ins with the hat and then the length of hair? You wear like this.
I mean, Jeepers Creepers.
It's
that's
like
awesome.
You moved away from your Children of the Corn thing, and now you're the Jeepers Creepers guy.
Dude, I gotta keep it fresh with these horror movies, man. I love so like the lighting our photographer uses at weigh-ins also really highlights that. It's a super dark background with like the ominous lighting. I'm like, this is perfect for me with my wide brim hats, just looking like an absolute creep at weigh-ins. But yeah.
Jeez. I don't even know what to say after that one. And it is horror movie reference. Anyways, Matt, it sounds like, Hunter, you've just got it pretty nailed down right now. And as long as everything kind of goes to plans and we don't get any kind of wild change in the world, looks like 247 Fighting Championship is going to be on the map for a while. And, you know, me and Ed talk about eventually trying to get together and come out to a show. You doing a double weekend show in your own venue next year. That sounds like a perfect kind of setup, and get a chance to check out your chef and all that stuff. But
yeah, now I'm kind of glad. Now I'm kind of glad. I was thinking about going in October, but now I'll wait for this dope spot. I'll wait for this dope fancy spot.
That's the smart move, man. You guys have definitely, you know, front row seats whenever you need them, man, at any 247 event. You guys are the best. Always treated me super well. Like you guys personally, but also professionally. And that's, you know, the double whammy of goodness. You guys are the best.
Thank you. Awesome. Do you want to throw out any Twitter handles or Instagram or websites before we sign out here?
Sure, man. It's just 247fighting.com and at 247 Fighting Championships on Instagram. At 247 Fighting on Twitter and Facebook. Also, we do have our own live streaming app. So, you know, we're not with Flow or Fight TV or DAZN or one of those. We just went out and got our own. So it's called 247 Live. You can get it on iOS, Apple TV, and Roku. And our Android app just got finished today. So we just added Android to the mix. I don't know if it's actually live on the Play Store yet, but the app is done in development and will be very, very soon. And also Amazon Fire TV. So you can get 247 Live there to watch all of our streams, all of our past fights, future fights, podcasts, all the stuff lives there. Yeah, dude, with the Apex Center, little Pittsburgh Apex Center coming up, things are about to get real in 247 land. So yeah, if you guys want to follow us, just watch a live stream, come out to a show, support us, man. This is like these local fighters. I do say it a lot and I sound like a broken record, but this truly is where it all begins for them. Everybody that you watch in the UFC started out here at some point, started out as an amateur at some point, had one or two pro fights and had to build that audience and that base and build their brand. It's really, really the most rewarding feeling ever when you've watched a guy come up from that level and then make it big time in the UFC. And I promise if you become a part of these young fighters' journey and get to see that payoff, it's going to be instantly worth it. So if you're a fight fan at all and you haven't been to a regional show, doing yourself a huge disservice, man. You gotta change that and get out there. I don't even care if it's ours. If you're not near Pittsburgh, find the one that's near you and go support that one. I promise you'll love it.
For
Absolutely.
Sure. And you got to call it the Bergplex or something. Don't call it the Apex. Stop. The UFC's got enough of their own. You know, call it the Bergplex. Or somebody got shut down for calling their some place called Ultimate Fighting Chicken or something like that, and they got sued by the UFC. God.
So Ultimate so Fighting Chicken.
It could be the 247 Homestek.
Yeah, let's go.
Homestekplex. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, the Homoplex. Let's go.
it's about time to wrap it up now. Fans can check out the show at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at Twitter at MMAHawk21. Also on Instagram at MMAHawk21. Check out Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbirzol on Instagram, Old Head Carb on Twitch. And as mentioned earlier, this video podcast is always available on allaccessmma.com. Check out allaccessmma.com for our video podcast, MMA news, and MMA stories. Hunter, you're the man. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for adding content on our channel. We look forward to your next show. And, man, best of luck, brother.
Thanks, guys. That was truly an awesome episode. Appreciate you having me on.
Cheers. Good night, everyone.